We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
And welcome to In the Know, the Hornets 24/7 podcast. Your knowledgeable hosts are Michael McNamara.
Me and a grizzly bear, I'm betting on me.
And me, Ryan Schwan.
I've been playing some Dungeons & Dragons because I'm really cool like that.
Let's get it started. All Hornets, all the time.
Welcome to the show. The first round of the playoffs are over. And we have a special guest for you a little later on the show, Henry Abbott of ESPN's True Hoop. But of course, first we got to get to the big thing. Clippers season's over. Michael, Chris Paul will be a Hornet, right? 2 months from now.
He will definitely not be a Hornet. I could guarantee that. You need to stop. I listened to our last podcast the other day. You caught yourself the first couple times. By the end of the podcast, you were saying Hornet, Hornet, Hornet. You weren't even catching yourself anymore. You were just going with it. This has to stop, Ryan.
Yeah. And I know I say it at least once, because we've already recorded the Henry Abbott part of it. I know I say it at least once there, probably 20 times.
Yeah.
Pelicans.
We'll get you off. We'll find you a way. But Pelican, I don't know. I mean, this is a question that nobody could answer. I don't even think Chris Paul could answer it right now. And I don't know if it's really the question to be asking. People ask, will he be a Pelican? Will he come back? That's unanswerable. To me, the whole point of my piece is it at least worthwhile for Dell to be in pursuit of him? I mean, I think we had some fans who were dreaming last summer after we got the first pick and, you know, we're laying out reasons why the New Orleans should go after Deron Williams and why he might come. To me, you know, I'm sure Dell made a phone call, but, you know, that probably ended as quick as it started. You know, with the Chris Paul thing, my whole belief is you don't know, but it does appear to be wide open. I mean, I wrote a column 11 months ago laying out what would have to happen in order for it to be a possibility. And basically what I said would have to happen as far as the Clippers are concerned happened. I mean, I don't think that by any means is he a lock to go back to L.A. I think if basketball is his top priority, he can't go back to L.A. So it's at least a possibility. And if it's a possibility, Dell has to go all in my belief.
Yeah. So, and I will say that I 100% agree that Dell should at least go after him. But here's one other reason why I kind of want him to go after him. When, during free agency, are the dumbest contracts handed out. The ones that you're just like, I cannot believe somebody made that.
The very beginning.
Very beginning. First few days, as soon as that first domino falls that everybody's waiting on, that, oh, where's that guy going? Suddenly they're like, I'm not getting that guy. I need to pick up somebody, and they hand out stupid contracts. So if Dell is tied up pursuing Chris Paul for the first few days, then, I mean, I'm not saying he's going to necessarily make a dumb signing, and he hasn't shown that he will, but that's one more way that we can be sure that he can't make a dumb signing, because he'll be after Chris Paul going all in there, and, you know, hopefully none of those, he won't be like, oh, well, I missed on Paul, I got to get Brandon Jennings for $80 million.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I'm hoping that regardless, Dell doesn't, you know, dish out a bad contract, even if he, you know, doesn't get Chris Paul or pursuing him or whatever. But I think that that could be a fascinating just overall theme for this off season. I was thinking about it. If I'm a mid or even bottom level team, I have two things to turn this team around. It's either a superstar in the free agent class or a superstar in the draft. That would be my thing, is you go all in to try to get a superstar in free agency. If you don't, you don't spend any money, and then, you know, hopefully you stink the next year and get somebody from this loaded class. But for the Pelicans in particular, I mean, I guess first it has to start off with, you know, how big of a chance is it that he leaves L.A.? And, you know, as Henry will talk about later in the podcast, you know, from a market standpoint and from a ability to build his brand, I mean, it definitely makes sense for Chris Paul, but how can you possibly say, with their lack of flexibility and them going backwards, I mean, can you sell me on basketball reasons? If you're the Clippers front office, how do you sell Chris Paul that this is the best place for him basketball-wise?
You basically say, we won the Pacific Division. Blake Griffin got injured in the playoffs. Our team was really good, and we probably would have beaten Memphis otherwise. And where are you going to go where there's a team in place that's already better than this one?
And see, that's a hard one to answer, because you wouldn't have seen that team with you. I mean,
right.
I brought up the New Jersey Nets when they acquired Jason Kidd and kind of shot off without any other real acquisitions. In fact, they traded their starting point guard, acquired Kidd, and with the same guys around them and a rookie draft pick, they went from being one of the worst teams in the league to in the NBA Finals for the next 2 years. Somebody in the comments section said, oh, that's the only one. But it's not, and it's not even close. I mean, does anybody remember Phoenix with Steve Nash? That team went from, I know I have it here somewhere, but I think it was 29 wins to the next year. They had something like 63, and then were obviously good going forth. And they didn't even have a draft pick that year. They actually had the 7th pick that year, and that's when they took Lou Alding and essentially traded off, sold his rights.
Sold him.
Yeah. They basically sold him because they were they went from 29 to 63 wins. And then, for an even more recent example, with the same exact player, how about we take Chris Paul when he went to the Clippers? And
right.
Chris Paul goes to the Clippers. They actually gave up quite a few things in that trade. I guess you could say they added Caron Butler and, you know, whatever. But really, it was Chris Paul, and they go from nothing to a second round team and a quasi contender. So I think that the Pelicans have more than any of those situations, whether it's the Jason Kidd one, the Nash, or when Paul originally went to the Clippers, both short term and for the future. I don't know. I guess it would be about educating Chris Paul, but Chris Paul has said in the past that he has watched all of the Hornets games last year. So I think he knows what the team is. He said in an interview that they just don't know how to finish, but they're a competitive team. I mean, I think he's aware of our roster. He obviously played with Anthony Davis. I think that the Pelicans offer better short-term in the future, but there are some other teams that I think should be in that conversation as well.
Right. So here's the one thing I see. I mean, and I don't know what kind of ego issues he might have in this situation. He basically pushed his way out of New Orleans. And he demanded a trade somewhere, and he accepted the Clippers, and he's done well there. But I don't know if he's willing to admit that. I don't think it is the same thing, but maybe he'll view it as going back to New Orleans as admitting a mistake, that I shouldn't have done that, I shouldn't have left, and that he wouldn't want to admit that. That's another way you could look at it. I don't know Chris Paul personally, but he might be the kind of person who doesn't like to admit mistakes.
So
he's definitely not like that kind of person on the floor.
Yeah, and this is what I find fascinating is if he leaves the Clippers, it's not going to be LeBron decision, type level, but he's going to have to answer for it regardless. It's going to look like he's abandoning another team. I've read more this week about how CP3 is another whiny diva, people comparing him to Dwight. So let's say he does leave the Clippers. So not necessarily for the Pelicans, but just in general. I mean, regardless, he's going to have to answer that. To me, if I'm his PR guy and I'm trying to give him some kind of way to sell the move, I think there's landmines everywhere. I think it's a lot easier, though, to sell it as, you know, I left here, kids grew up here, love it. Should have never left in the first place, but they didn't have an owner at the time. Now I sat down with Mr. Benson. He's a great owner, you know, really gives them the capability to do something. Always loved Monty and Doug. I mean, to me, that's easier to sell than, I don't know how you go to the press conference with, let's say, the Houston Rockets and sell on how he left the Clippers, for Houston. I don't know. I think either way it's tough, but if you're saying he's leaving the Clippers, I actually think it's easier to sell a return to New Orleans than practically anywhere else.
It's true. Let's do the flip, though, okay? You're Chris Paul. You're surveying the potential free agent landing plane, and you know you have to just, I mean, Pelicans aside, you go anywhere, you have to win. You have to prove that you left, and then to shut up all the people who are condemning you for it, you have to win, and win big, maybe win a finals. At least get to the finals, right?
Oh, yeah.
So you're Chris Paul. You're looking around the league. What team do you think is the best opportunity for you to go to the finals?
Man, I mean, that's tough because my first instinct would be to stay out west. I mean, I know the east is relatively weak outside of Miami, but it still has Miami in it. I mean, if I go to Atlanta, am I really that sure that me, Dwight, and Al Horford are better than the big three in Miami who already have built the chemistry, already, you know, have the role players in place, have, you know, a guy in Pat Riley who has done this numerous times before, where now I go to Atlanta and I've got to put my faith in Larry Drew and whoever they're, Danny Ferry, who LeBron couldn't wait to leave in Cleveland. So Atlanta, I know, seems to be kind of the quasi-favorite if he leaves Los Angeles, but I just can't see him going to the East, and I wouldn't want to go to the East. I would think that the West is a lot more winnable, and to me, it honestly would come down to Houston and New Orleans. I can't see Dallas. Dallas has – Dirk's contract is so big that they really can't afford Paul, Dirk, and Howard And even if Paul and Howard take a little less, Dallas would still have to find a way to rid themselves of Sean Marion and a couple other contracts. Plus, Dirk would be leaving soon, so now it's just it's me and Dwight. For me, it would really come down to New Orleans and New Orleans and Houston. I would have to try to figure out how I think I could play with James Harden. And also with those teams, it would come down to, you know, maybe moving other pieces. And this is where the Pelicans would say, okay, you tell us that you might sign. We'll go out and explore some trades with Robin Lopez and Vasquez and some of these other guys, maybe even Eric Gordon, see what else we could put around you, Ryan Anderson and Anthony Davis, and then we'll come back to you with some of the trades we were offered and see what you like. And then Houston would be doing the same thing with trying to dump Lynn and et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, at that point, the roster shifting wouldn't be over, but just with the core, the flexibility, Houston and New Orleans would be my two main targets.
So, you know who I think everybody's leaving out? And I know why, but I think it wouldn't matter as much. The Spurs can get in on this. And yeah, they have Tony Parker. I mean, and I don't know, can you play Paul and Parker together? I mean, in a lot of ways, that's a terrifying idea, having the team with both Parker and Paul on it. But then you can also move Parker for quite a bit. So, and the Spurs are at about $40 million after Ginobili and Steven Jackson roll off of their cap this year. So they actually worry me a little bit, because they can come to you and say, look, we're already an elite team. Yeah, we can sign Manu back again. Yeah, we'll just renounce him and he's not going anywhere else. We can pull him back for probably $3 or $4 million a year. I'm sure he would take it because he's injured all the time. And, you know, we'll have Tony Parker on the team and you on the team. And if we need to move Tony Parker because it's not working out, we'll move to Tony Parker. And does the idea of the Spurs without Tony Parker but with Chris Paul terrify the hell out of you? It terrifies the hell out of me.
No, I mean, because I guess to me it would be a couple things. It would be Duncan at the end of the road. I mean, so even though, you know, I don't love Blake Griffin, I'm leaving a 23-whatever-year-old Blake Griffin for a Tim Duncan who probably is playing one, two more years tops. Popovich has already said that he's leaving once Tim Duncan retires. And, you know, I mean, that one doesn't scare me unless, yeah, you could flip Tony Parker for, gosh, I don't even know. I'm trying to think of a team that might want to fill the point guard role. But, you know, really you're just talking about at that point a core moving forward of Chris Paul, Kawhi Leonard, and who knows who's going to be the coach. So,
yeah, I'm not sure Tim Duncan's only there for another year or two. And even if he, I mean, he played phenomenal this year regardless. And that team is, I mean, every year we're saying next year that team's going to stink. This team is still ended up with the 2 seed, or is it the 1 seed?
No, they ended up at 2, but yeah, I mean, Tim Duncan is great, but 2 years ago, Kevin Garnett was great too. I mean, at some point the wheels do fall off. I mean, and you're talking about Tim Duncan versus James Harden versus Anthony Davis versus Blake Griffin. I mean, I think it's a creative outside the box one. When you were saying the one nobody was thinking about, you were right, because I was trying to think of who you were going to say, and San Antonio would have never crossed my mind. So it's a interesting outside of the box scenario. And if he wants to get paid a decent amount of money and win next year, would it be crazy for, you know, maybe he signs a 1 year, $15 million deal and tries to go mercenary that way?
Or even he structures it with Tim Duncan's contract. Duncan's up and he's got 2 years left.
Yeah. And that's, to me, that's going to be such an interesting thing, because I obviously threw out the possibility of the Knicks and Lakers because, you know, there's no way that they're going to, you know, well, at least starting off with the Knicks, there's no way that they're going to be able to get to a point where they pay him. I mean, nobody's taken that Amari contract. They don't have their amnesty anymore. I guess theoretically, maybe they could, I mean, put it this way, even if they traded Tyson Chandler to a team for nothing, they would still be over the cap. I mean, New York is just so far from a possibility. That's absolutely not going to happen. The Lakers would have to do some drastic things. Basically, they would have to trade Gasol for nothing and amnesty Kobe, which, I mean, I'm cold-blooded. I don't care about the past at all. So if Chris Paul came to me and said that they would sign if I did that, I would do it. I mean, but and they would also have to trade Nash, but I think you could trade him to Toronto or somebody will take him. But you know, the Lakers are not going to do that, so they're not really a possibility. I mean, there's really not many teams out there that have the combination of things. Let me throw out this one other just crazy scenario for you. Don't think it could possibly happen, but was interested to see in what if you would do it. So Chris Paul comes to you. He says, okay, I'll return. A lot of these young guys are nice, but I'm really tired of losing. I got to win now and in the future. I'll come here. I talked to Dwight. He wants to come here too. And the Lakers are willing to take a sign and trade of Anthony Davis and Eric Gordon. So you'll have me, Rhino, Dwight Howard. We'll be able to fill in some other pieces. I'll get my veteran guys on the bat line, and we'll be able to get you some other guys. But those are your core three moving forward. You've got to rid yourself of the Anthony Davis era. Would you do that?
Yeah.
Wow. You're cold, too.
Yeah, I'd do it. I'm sorry. I mean, Chris Paul, Ryan Anderson, Dwight Howard, your big three is now comparable to anything else that can be thrown out there.
Hopefully, Victor Oladipo, too, in that scenario. But
right, because you'd have that high draft pick still.
Yeah.
So you want a cold-blooded, never ever going to happen in the world, but this would be, like, I would laugh if this could actually ended up happening. Chris Paul signs a one-year deal with San Antonio to try to win it all, and then he and LeBron go to the Lakers a year afterwards.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of interesting things there. I mean, and that's what's interesting about the different size contracts is he waited and he didn't sign an extension with the Clippers because he wanted that five-year deal. But yeah, we saw when he was here in New Orleans, him kind of worrying, you know, so he didn't sign the long deal that he could have at the time. He took a shorter deal with an opt-out possibility, so that way if things didn't go right, which they didn't, he could leave. And everybody's talking about the difference in money between, you know, staying with the Clippers and going elsewhere. First of all, you're going to hear a lot of it's a $30 million difference, but we're not that stupid. It's an extra year. The difference in the first 4 years is about $6 million between the yep. Clippers could give them, what we could give them. And then, yeah, it's another $24 million in that fifth year. But unless Chris Paul never plays again, he's going to get something in that what would be that fifth year from whoever he signs for. So don't let people tell you it's a $30 million difference. But, you know, with the worries he has with the Clippers – you know, he has to be worried, even if he's going to go back just so he could keep his Cliff Paul commercials, so his kids can stay in L.A., so he could have after basketball more opportunities. He's got to be worried. I mean, how could he feel good about signing his life away the next 5 years in L.A. when they don't have a coach, they don't really have a GM, they have a racist penny-pinching owner, like, The people who say that he's a lock to just re-sign with the Clippers, I couldn't personally disagree with that more.
Right.
So
you worried about Utah at all?
No.
Me either.
Yeah. No.
I just threw it out there.
No, I mean, a dark horse that I didn't bring up in the article, the only other dark horse that I would be somewhat worried about, and they would have to do a couple of things, but I could see the fit there being, honestly – is a team I'm watching right now, the Indiana Pacers. Mm-hmm. I mean, you got, because here's the formula for how you get Chris Paul interested. You have to obviously have enough cap space and really good players. Well, how do you accomplish both? Because usually really good players are getting paid, you know, a lot of money. Well, you need to have a guy on a rookie scale contract who is very good already. I mean, that's what makes it so tempting with the Pelicans, is they have a guy in Eric Gordon who, when healthy, is a quasi all-star. They have a great contract, a great, you know, role player, and a guy who would be perfect with CP3 and Ryan Anderson, who they got on a great deal. And then they have Anthony Davis, a budding superstar who's on his rookie contract for the foreseeable future. That's how you got to do it. If you already have two or three stars on your roster, yeah, Chris Paul would love to play there because he could help you win, but you don't have the cap space. And if you have the cap space, you probably don't have the superstars. So Indiana is a team with Paul George playing at a superstar level on a rookie deal, obviously a guy he's comfortable with, and David West and a big man option in Roy Hibbert. That is the dark horse team, if it really is just about basketball and not about market size. That would somewhat worry me, but then again, he has to go out east. So those are the possibilities. But there's one other thing I want to address, because it was something I didn't anticipate in some of the comments I've seen. I anticipated people saying that they don't want him back, that how are you going to move forward if you're still looking at the past, whatever. But the one that I didn't anticipate is people not wanting to bring him back, because, you know, they don't think that over the next 4 years he's going to be worth his money. Concerns about his knees, about him, you know, tying up our cap, and basically him being past his prime, just as our other role players come into their prime. Just from a pure fit standpoint or ideals about how to build a team, would you pass on Chris Paul under any of those circumstances?
No, absolutely not. So, I mean, here's the thing. So, would I be worried about his knee? Sure. But you know what? I mean, the guy has played two seasons, most of the seasons, and his numbers may not be, like, as eye-poppingly unbelievable as they were during his prime in New Orleans, where he was the centerpiece. But you know what? He is still, by any statistical measure, third or fourth most impressive guy on the floor, most impactful guy in so many different ways. And any player, I would say I would pay a max contract for any of the top 10 in the league for as long as they want, as long as they don't have a history where they've missed most of the season the past couple seasons. And any top 10 player is worth a max contract to me. And I know Paul's, like, if he's not going to be approaching Supermax, he is Supermax, which is, you know, $20 million plus a year, but he's worth it. And, I mean, if you can put him next to any sort of big three at all, I mean, two other guys, Ryan Anderson, Anthony Davis, or Eric Gordon, if you can, I mean, you can keep Eric Gordon still. I mean, if you have a big four like that, and even if Eric Gordon's out half a season every year, you're now like in a Manu Ginobili kind of situation, where you're like, yeah, I've got Chris Paul who's there all the time. I got Davis there all the time. I got Anderson who's there all the time. And if Eric Gordon plays half the season plus the playoffs for me, I don't care if he's out half the season.
Yeah. Yeah, and how long do you think? So Chris Paul is definitely, I mean, he's top five now. But let's say top 10. How many more years, if you had to guess, do you think Chris Paul is a top 10 player, or at least in the discussion where he's 10, 11, 12, whatever? How many more years of that do you think we have?
Oh, I expect, I mean, he's what, 27 now? I would expect him to be able to play that way to 32, 33, easy.
So at least through this contract.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, so 30, you don't want to be signing someone at 30 or 31. That's where they start to decline. But I mean, even if that's the case, Chris Paul is not a he's not Gerald Wallace. I mean, he is a guy who can be extraordinarily effective even without all the explosive ability in the world. Because, I mean, I'm always confused when people say Chris Paul is one of the fastest people out there, or Chris Paul's like athletic. His game isn't athleticism. It's shiftiness. It's power. He's a powerful point guard. It's the ability to get anywhere with the ball, but hesitations with, I mean, he can go either way. I mean, his game is not predicated on just the ability to run fast. And there's also the fact that, I mean, there was an article Hollinger did like 4 years ago where he talked about players in declining and what sort of players lasted for a long time. And the guys who managed to play until they're like 36, 37 and still be really effective, and they're guards, they have to be good at two different things. Either they have to be passing, they have to be big, or they have to be a shooter. And if you can get any two of those three, he's going to be great. Paul's not big, but he can pass and he can shoot.
Yeah, I mean, like, if you're talking about the next 4 to 5 years, and just there, just 4 to 5 years, just production, who's going to help my team win, you know, you take a guy like Kyrie Irving, who everybody's, you know, so in love with, and just thinking, I would take Chris Paul for the next 4 to 5 years over Kyrie Irving. I wouldn't even think about it.
Right.
So nobody in their right mind would say, let's not add Kyrie Irving to this team. So, you know, it's just for this contract, then you reassess after that. To me, the thought of even possibly saying, you know, like I had people ask me on my Twitter feed, would you rather have Chris Paul over the next 4 years at $20 million a season or Eric Bledsoe at 10? Like, to me, I wouldn't even know. I love to make the devil's advocate argument. I would have no clue how I would make the argument for Eric Bledsoe. And we've talked very highly of him, but to me it's not even close. I mean, so it wouldn't even be in consideration. What I will say, though, that kind of worries me is, I mean, how do we explain? We're sitting here calling Chris Paul a top five player. He has been for numerous seasons. The guy's gotten past the first round once or twice. And he's never gotten past the second round. There has to be something here where, you know, something's going. I mean, this is a top level player. You look at the other guys who are in the conversation with, okay, you know, who are the top players in the league? Kevin Durant is moving on round after round. LeBron's moving on. What would be your explanation? I mean, what's going on with Chris Paul not really even getting to that next level?
The teams he's been on have sucked. I mean, there's no way around it. I mean, the Hornets got pretty far, but they were reliant on Tyson Chandler, second best player on that team, David West having a really solid, great year, even though David West has never, in my opinion, I mean, I don't think he even deserved necessarily to be an all-star when he was an all-star. He's always been a borderline all-star at best. And that was David West's best year. And Peja Stojakovic, who's broken down. So those guys together managed to get to, what, 56 wins? And now in the Clippers' land, he's got Blake Griffin and Jamal Crawford playing better than ever. And then a bunch of guys who are nonsense. And DeAndre Jordan is nothing. I'm sorry, I'm still flabbergasted when people like act like DeAndre Jordan means anything to the basketball world, because he couldn't even play like more than a minute or two in the fourth quarter in the playoffs this year. The guy's garbage. You should never, ever expect him to be a major player. So, I mean, it's just Chris Paul has had bad teams. And the years that he's made it into the first round, he's taken some real big piles into the first round, which is just saying something right there. I mean, if Chris Paul was not on this Clippers team this year, they're probably winning 30 games. He is worth 20 games by himself.
I agree, but I think it's a compounded problem. I think that he has what you would call garbage teams around him, because the GMs and the people who put together the team around Chris Paul see Chris Paul's unique skills, ability to run a team, run an offense, and they put certain players around Chris Paul and, more importantly, avoid other kind of players. Chris Paul is the best player outside of LeBron with the ball in his hand, you know, as far as creating for himself and others, running an offense. And when that happens, you don't want the ball to be in anybody else's hand when Chris Paul is on the court. So you surround him with jump shooters, with alley-oop guys, one-dimensional guys. But, you know, you don't really give him – like, could you ever imagine a team going after Zach Randolph with Chris Paul on the team? I mean, I don't see it. I don't see teams going out and get wing players that are ball dominant and handle the ball. I mean, when the Clippers had Jamal Crawford, usually Chris Paul was off the court, and that would be Crawford's time to kind of have the ball in his hands as much as he needs it to be effective. I just think that there's this error, and I think Chris Paul being so good gives GMs this excuse to surround him with one-dimensional players. Then we get to the playoffs and teams take the ball out of Chris Paul's hands. These guys haven't done anything with it all season, and then they fall apart. So I just, to me, I mean, I think the instinct would be to get Eric Gordon off the roster and get Chris Paul a knockdown shooter at the two guard position. But, you know, if the Pelicans are so lucky to get Chris Paul, I'd actually like to see Gordon stay and see what could happen if, you know, Chris Paul doesn't have to dominate the ball so much of an offense.
Yeah, I agree. I think that him having a release valve, in a lot of ways, David West was a release valve for him. He allowed him to take plays where he didn't have to have the ball in his hands all the time, because West was a reliable scorer on his own. He could get his own shot. And, I mean, Blake Griffin in some ways can. Not as well as David West, but he's got other abilities that make him the same sort of thing. But there's also the fact that Chris Paul has already always been on a team that has been basically locked in with what assets they have when either he blossomed or when he arrived. So, I mean, the Hornets, he blossomed after his first season. Everybody's like, wow, he's better than he thought he was going to be. They didn't know necessarily he was superstar. But within a year, I mean, after the first season, after his rookie season, within a year, they had locked in every penny of salary cap that they really could spend on any sort of major player. They had put Peja under a full max contract. They had David West locked into a $10 million deal, and they had traded for Tyson Chandler. After that, you're not moving any of those pieces, especially when they start getting injured. And when he goes to the Clippers, they had Blake Griffin, and you knew they were paying Blake Griffin, and DeAndre Jordan, they felt they had to pay DeAndre Jordan because maybe he could have turned into something. I'm not saying it was necessarily a horrible idea. Well, probably it was. And then they went and did kind of exactly what the Hornets did, which is why I always say the Clippers remind me of the Hornets. They spent huge dollars on Caron Butler, a broken-down small forward who could shoot. And then tried to find some parts that would come in at $500,000. And, you know, you can point at Jamal Crawford and say, Jamal Crawford's better than anything the Hornets ever got to surround Chris Paul with. But you know what? Jamal Crawford is a completely one-dimensional player. He shoots the basketball. He scores at a decent clip at this point, and he does nothing else for you. In my world, Morris Peterson is maybe 10% worse than Jamal Crawford overall. So it's the same thing.
Yeah, I mean, but there were, you know, you did ship J.R. Smith out. You did ship out Marcus Thornton. You did.
Oh, they made some dumb moves. I'm not arguing
but
that.
But the moves are pretty similar. You get rid of these scorers who take the ball out of Chris Paul's hands and take shots away from him and him setting up. And of course, I mean, if you have one possession, you would want the ball in either LeBron or Chris Paul's hand. You could survey, you could look over every guy in the NBA. If I have one possession and then you say, okay, whose hands do you want the ball in? It would be either LeBron or Chris Paul. I can't even think of who would be third for me, but
Durant.
You know, not Durant, not necessarily to create a shot on his own and or for others. If I wanted just one guy taking a jump shot, yeah, it would definitely be Durant. But so anyway, I mean, In a vacuum, yeah, that looks great. And of course, when Chris Paul is on the court, why wouldn't I want him running every single possession if he is that high level of a guy? But then we just see what happens in the playoffs over and over again. I mean, San Antonio, game seven, they just, you know, essentially had a strategy of, well, I could just push up on Peja. He can't create for himself, but I could do this with the Tyson Chandler pick and roll. And all of a sudden, there was nobody else on that team that could create for themselves or get anything else going. So anyway, I just think that in some ways, Chris Paul's brilliance, you know, has led to these rosters being put together that are great during the regular season, but are very limited in the postseason. So I'll be interested to see going forward. But what are your odds? Go ahead.
I was actually going to hit you with the same question. The odds that Chris Paul leaves the Clippers or the odds that Chris Paul reaches the Pelicans? Which, both? Do you want both?
Yeah, go with Clippers first.
I think the odds of him leaving the Clippers is 40%.
Wow.
And I think the odds of him arriving as a New Orleans Pelican is 10%.
Okay. Yeah, I would have it. I don't know. I mean, I still want to believe in Chris Paul that winning means more than anything. If he signs with the Clippers, like I said in that piece, either he's lying when he says that, or he's a horrible evaluator of talent and what wins, which could be very possible when you see some of the guys he's asked for his teams to trade for or, you know, sign, et cetera. So that's possible. But I want to believe that he's smart enough to see that, you know, it's just not happening in L.A., that they'll, you know, they'll always be the second-rate team in that town, that, you know, that good organizations are really, you know, built on a certain structure. And when you have an owner like that, and when you have, you know, don't really have a coach or a GM, you know, in place for the long term, that structure is just so shaky. I want to believe he'll see all that and leave, but I mean, I've seen all the media exposure and the national commercials that he's got more and more since he went out there. I do believe that the game of life is bigger than the game of basketball, even though fans don't want to admit it. I don't think Chris Paul will ever admit it, but I think that will be the reason he most likely stays. I would say him leaving the Clippers 20%. If he does leave the Clippers, I really think it's a toss-up between New Orleans and Houston. So I would have the same. He comes to the Pelicans at you 10%.
Okay.
So here's my other one, though, and this is just something I was thinking about, because we saw some sabotage try to happen last year with Toronto and the Knicks, where you know, Toronto wanted Nash, so they signed Landry Fields in a way to kind of sabotage the Knicks. It backfired, whatever. So let's say the Clippers do see the Pelicans as a the main competition for Chris Paul. They start to get worried. You're Dell Demps. They come to you. They're willing to give, you know, trade you Eric Bledsoe for a super low price, a lot less than you were expecting to have to give up for him. But it puts you in a position where you can't go after Chris Paul. You won't have the flexibility anymore. It's contingent. You got to take this trade before the draft, obviously before free agency. Would you do that deal? Would you take the sure thing?
Yes. I would. Are you surprised by that?
I mean, a little bit. I mean, I just...
Well, I mean, I just told you my odds that I think Chris Paul is going to become a Pelican is like 10%. I'm not going to take a 10% chance at Chris Paul over a 100% for a very cheap Bledsoe. Because if I don't have to really pay the Clippers much to take Bledsoe, then I'm taking Bledsoe. I'm going to look for, you know, anything with that draft pick and see what I got next year. Because, I mean, Bledsoe is a major improve over Vasquez. So, I mean, it would have to be something like all they want from me is Vasquez.
Yeah, like my thing was Vasquez, and then you have to take Butler's contract on for 1 year, which that would put you out of the Chris Paul Derby. So that, you know, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
See,
and then I would try to route Butler somewhere else and go after Chris Paul anyways.
Yeah, but no, I mean, the sure thing, it's just such a tough question for me, because did Bledsoe make an improvement? Yeah, then you're talking about moving from the 24th best team to the 9th. I mean, to me, the home runs come up so rarely. If you go and get Bledsoe, then the Pelicans are going to be a solid team moving forward. You know, it is relatively a small market. We have to be realistic. LeBron is never coming here. I mean, an A-plus free agent is never coming here outside of a special situation like with Chris Paul. We're going to be too good to get another one in the draft. I mean, if the goal, if like I said, 29 out of 30 teams end the season miserable, if your goal is to be the best, I still think that you need to, somewhere down the line, you're going to have to add a superstar to this team, not just a couple more solid players. So, I don't know. It would be really tough for me. You get the sure B in one hand, and then a 10% chance at the A-plus in the other. It wouldn't be as easy for me as it sounds like for you. But it's interesting. And then the last thing I have is a little game of more or less likely. So Chris Paul isn't the only former player that's going to be a free agent this summer. There's a lot of ex-Hornets who could possibly become future Pelicans. So you tell me, are these players more or less likely to be a Pelican than Chris Paul next year? So I'll start with David West.
Less.
Any chance? I mean,
West is never coming back.
You would never, you don't think, because of him, or do you don't think we'd pursue him?
Both.
Okay.
I don't think I mean, based on what I heard when he left, he's not coming back to New Orleans. And I don't think we would go after him either. It's just, he is, you know, 32. He's going to be one to be paid this last one time. And while I think his next 3 or 4 years, he's going to be a fine basketball player, I mean, there's too many power forwards on this team already. We don't need another.
Yeah. Yeah, so, I mean, but to me, so many of his comments were about the George Shin era and the lack of an owner.
I mean, at some point, you just have a sour taste in your mouth about a place and you don't go back to it. And, I mean, I'm not saying it's about New Orleans. I'm just saying, I don't expect it to ever happen.
Okay. Obviously, the team looking for a point guard, guy who was our point guard last year, Jared Jack, has a player option, could opt out, become a free agent. Any chance he's a Pelican?
No.
Zero.
Okay, well, let me change that. The only way Jared Jack becomes a Pelican again is if the Hornets have signed a starting point guard and they need a backup, and they've gotten rid of Vasquez, getting their starting point guard. And maybe they sign Jared Jack as a, you know, super backup.
What if they, I mean, here's...
I doubt it would happen, though.
Here's mine. What if they go the other way? What if they get rid of Vasquez? Maybe they take Vasquez, the pick, they package it together for a suit, I mean, like, a star, very good, small forward or center. I don't know how it happens, whatever. And Austin Rivers is the point guard of the future. Monty and Dell want to bring Jack back in order to tutor him for the next year or two.
I mean, it's a possibility. I just don't see it happening.
All right. So here we go. These are the two most interesting to me, so I saved them for last. This guy is who we are and who we want to be. Monty's exact quote about Marco Bellinelli lighting it up in the postseason. Free agent, possible hole at shooting guard if Eric Gordon Lee, any chance we see Marco? I mean, Marco is still a guy that Monty Williams points to as a huge piece of evidence for our player development system. Any chance Marco can set?
I would say it's a higher chance than Chris Paul.
Okay.
So, but I'm thinking more along the lines of 20% chance than 10% chance.
All right, and the last one, this guy.
I mean, he'd be like slotting into like a Roger Mason role. mean, that's what I would see them trying to fill in with him.
So for me, the shooting guard scenarios are, like I said, if you could move Eric Gordon for Luol Deng, and now you have a huge opening at shooting guard, or maybe you have Oladipo, maybe you have Oladipo as your future shooting guard, but you know, you want somebody starting for now. I mean, I still think, again, I think Eric Gordon is the biggest chip as far as where that lands, how the rest of the team falls this summer. If he moves, you know, you got to find yourself another starting shooting guard.
Yeah.
Marco's been here. The Bulls can't really pay him. Has some kind of comfort level, so.
But he's still not that good. Sorry. It's just... let's move on from Marco. Right. It's actually kind of depressing me a little bit.
The last one, kind of rejuvenated his career in a way, need more talent, guy who could create for himself on offense. This is if the Pelicans really do want to get more veteran-oriented and push for the playoffs next year. What would you say if J.R. Smith paid a visit?
You know... I still have the knee-jerk reaction, no. No, 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 no. No, 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 no. No J.R. Smith. And I may just be completely stupid about that. I don't know him personally, and that's always been his issues, is just he makes bad decisions, and he's an idiot off the court. And, you know, maybe he's playing better now, and maybe he's matured. Maybe he's become the Zach Randolph who just... been in the league 7-8 years and realized, what am I doing? And come around. But I don't know. I mean, the one good thing is it's Dell and it's Monty, and they never had J.R. Smith. So they don't have, like, the poison remembrance of what it was like having him around before.
Right.
So they're at least free to take a look at J.R. Smith and not have any of the baggage. I still have baggage. And I would not want him coming around.
And the other thing is people will say, well, Dell and Monty don't usually go after players like that. And that's just dead wrong.
Right. You know,
the Hornets were after Jamal Crawford 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Chris, I mean, they loved Kevin Martin, who doesn't play. I know he had a big block in today's game, but he doesn't play a lick of defense. He's a pure scorer. I mean, this idea that all Dell and Monty go after are these defensive-minded guys who can't score just isn't true. They haven't landed some of the guys that they've pursued heavily, but, you know, I just think as a type of player, you know, whether Gordon is here or not, I think J.R. Smith would be a welcome addition type of player for Dell and Monty, but you're right. With all the other baggage that comes with it and the off-the-court stuff and needing veterans in the locker room to control him, which we obviously don't have, that's a different story. But I think they would love to add a guy who could just get his own shot and have a random 40-point outing. So,
well, here's the other thing about J.R. Smith that would worry me the most, even more than the off-court stuff. He played the first half of the season like he played every other season. He was not a smart J.R. Smith that played the first half of the season. He took dumb shots. He didn't get to the free throw line. And then they talk about it in New York. Suddenly the light turned on and J.R. Smith started attacking the basket and got way more free throws than he used to do and taking good shots, and he's working hard on defense. And, oh, it's because Jason Kidd talked to him. Or it's the fact that if he plays hard for 2 months, people will remember that and give him a massive contract this summer, so he's not being paid $1.8 million a year when he's got a whole lot of talent.
Yeah.
Because I think he just earned himself a good $5 million a year contract, if not more than that.
Yeah, it's a weird situation. The Knicks could only pay him a certain amount, a little under five.
Right.
So, I mean, if there's a team out there willing, you know, he said he would probably take a little less to stay with the Knicks. But if there's a team out there willing to give him $7-8 a year, where, you know, if you're looking at
Marcus Thornton contract.
Well, I mean, if you're looking at J.R. Smith and O.J. Mayo as kind of your free agent shooting guards this summer, I'd probably pay Smith more, and you know Mayo's going to get over five, so
yeah. Well, he didn't last year.
No, but I mean, I think that...
I'm not sure he played himself into a better contract, but you're right. I mean, those are your guys. And if you have a giant hole, gaping hole at shooting guard, I mean, Marcus Thornton got $8 million a year.
Right.
So isn't J.R. Smith worth $8 million a year?
Yeah, I mean, I think it would be really interesting. We expect a lot of turnover on this roster. If we see the Pelicans go the veteran route, I think that we're all thinking about specific free agents with this team that is in place. But if Vasquez, Lopez, you know, Eric Gordon, if some of these guys are uprooted in favor of guys like Luol Deng or Danny Granger or, you know, guys in their later 20s, I think you could see them supplementing those players with more veterans, and I think that brings those guys into play. So we'll see, but there's a lot of ex-Hornets on the market now as the Pelicans era begins. And, you know, the Gordon, I mean, the Chris Paul conversation is an interesting one to me, whether or not you think that it's probable, just the fact that it's possible and that, you know, Dell should really give time to exploring something that seemed like, I mean, think about 2 years ago, how crazy it seemed before Anthony Davis and winning the lottery. I mean, it was a slam dunk that you would not see Chris Paul in a New Orleans uniform again. And now here we are just a couple years later, and it's at least a possibility to be considered. So
I had two closing questions I wanted to ask you. So first one is, why didn't you mention Darren Collison in the former Hornets as free agent? Is he that low on your list of people you want to see as a Pelican?
Yeah, just because he's not good enough to be an upgrade at starting point guard, and he'll want to get paid more than a backup point. I mean, honestly, I would prefer Roberts at $800,000 to him at $3 or $4 million. So,
wow. Okay. So here's the other thing. This is gauge their trade value. Who at this moment has a higher trade value, Danny Granger or Eric Gordon?
I would say Eric Gordon, just because, you know, Granger didn't step on the court. You could at least maybe sell some GMs. And again, I think if Eric Gordon goes and takes a physical with another team's doctors, I think that doctor comes back and says, yeah, this guy is at full health. He should be at 100% at the beginning of training camp for you next year. There's nothing lingering from the injury 2 years ago. I honestly believe that. But I believe that he'll just get injured again in the future because he's so soft. But that's not going to show up, you know, on any MRI or anything like that. So I honestly think Eric Gordon could be tested by other doctors and his, you know, with his files and show that, no, there's nothing to be worried about here as far as long-term effects. So, you know, where with Granger sat out an entire year, that's something different. So I think that if a general manager really wants to be optimistic, there would be a lot of things that he could sell himself on. You know how sometimes you just avoid looking at the things you don't want to see. There's a lot of things in the positive column. If I wanted to truly sell myself on Eric Gordon, I don't know if the same could be said for Granger. So I think if you find the right GM, the right guy who's optimistic, the right guy who wants to see the things that are positive in Eric Gordon, I think he could have some solid trade value.
So what do you think would happen if Dell Demps calls up Indiana and says, we will trade you Eric Gordon for Danny Granger, and we'll take Jan Mahimi and his crappy contract with it if you give us George Hill? And then you can get into the Chris Paul sweepstakes.
Because
you just cleared $12 million for them.
Yeah, I mean, it would be an interesting proposition. I know they love George Hill, and they would be...
They do.
Yeah, they would be in a situation where if Chris Paul said no to them, which I'm sure they think he probably would, that they're with.
The question is to you, is $8 million a year of George Hill, is that good or bad for us?
I mean, defensively, it would be such a massive upgrade, and then you would still have the ability to move Vasquez for something else. But no, see, this is where I'm saying to me, I would probably look to explore something else. That might be like a plan G scenario for me. I would have an A, B, C, D, E, and F that are, more favorable, okay. but not horrible. But yeah, it's going to be such an interesting offseason because, I mean, gosh, I'd love to just zap into the future of October 31st and just have 3 minutes to go scour the internet for the Pelicans opening day roster. and then come back to current day and try to figure out how they did it. But I really have absolutely no idea how this roster will shake out, but there's so many possibilities. And, you know, the last thing I want to say is people are, you know, well, should I even, you know, I read your article, but now I get all excited. I'm just setting myself up for disappointment. Like, first of all, I love basketball as much as the next, but relax. It's a game where grown men throw a ball at a hoop. Like, you know, it would be great if Chris Paul comes back. If he doesn't, life will go on. It doesn't hurt you to talk about these possibilities and possibly get excited. It'll either happen or not. No need to turn away from it. But there are a lot of interesting possibilities. I have a lot of interesting discussions. I'm sure we'll hear a lot of interesting rumors over the summer, but it's fun. It's a lot better to be in this position, than the other position. Go check out a Los Angeles Clippers forum when you get the chance and see how panic ridden they all are over there and their desperate ideas for what they could get for DeAndre Jordan and, you know, all these possibilities. It's an exciting time right now to be a Pelicans fan.
Yep. So let's go bring on Henry Abbott. And of course, like I said, we recorded this previously, so I'm not bringing him on. I'm just cutting him in. We recorded it Friday morning. So he has no idea what happened in that that game between Memphis and the Clippers. So that adds some added flavor to some of his questions. And now we are joined by the godfather of the True Hoop Network, Henry Abbott of ESPN.com and True Hoop. Henry, thanks for coming on the show.
Yeah, can't possibly fail to live up to that title.
Godfather?
Yeah. what am I supposed to do now? Sit in the corner and, like, dress like a gangsta?
Yeah, every once in a while we have to come up and say, we need help. Can you take out the guys at SB Nation?
You're going to have to kiss the ring.
So we're bringing you on because I don't know if my listeners know, but clearly the people who read True Hoop half the time, they don't know. So you are a Portland Trailblazer fan, correct?
I grew up in Portland, Oregon, listening to the earliest model Walkman that there was, where Bill Shonley was telling me about the exploits of people like Terry Porter, and that's how I fell in love with NBA basketball.
So they're your team.
Yep.
This year, Damian Lillard, pick number 6. He's Rookie of the Year, played more minutes than anybody else in the league, which that kind of blows my mind. But you had the temerity to write that the numbers point to Anthony Davis as Rookie of the Year.
Yeah.
Do you have any friends left?
You can't worry about that in this business. No, but I have had a lot of angry people call me and such. I don't honestly have a big dog in that fight. Like, it's not like I feel like it's an outrage Lillard won. And to be totally honest, I suspect that when advanced stats get even more advanced, we'll learn that a particular subset of them, like a class of players that gets kind of screwed by advanced stats, are rookie high-volume scorers. Because basically Kevin Durant looked terrible in advanced stats when he was young too. But think about it, it makes sense. Like, he's new to the league, facing bigger, faster, stronger defenders than ever, on a bad team, asked to basically shoot a whole bunch, which is what was true to Lillard too. And advanced stats just don't favor that. And those same guys are going to be bad defenders compared to later in the league, because all rookies are. So they look bad in plus minus. They look pretty bad in PER because they're taking all these shots and they tend not to get a lot of, like, steals and rebounds and stuff. So you put it all together and, you know, every basketball expert said that Durant was right on track, even when advanced stats hated him as a rookie or sophomore. And everybody says the same about Lillard. They love Lillard, and I'm prepared to believe that he might really be the best rookie in this class. However, there was a lot of loosey-goosey stuff going on with advanced stats around the time this conversation was unfolding, where everybody had decided Lillard was the rookie of the year, and then they were just kind of retrofitting the stats to just lay out this like weak argument that, oh, well, if you discard this thing and discard that thing, and I just kind of wanted to say, look, if you're really going to be driven by stats, not that you need to be, but if you are, it's Anthony Davis. I mean, he contributed more by basically every advanced stat we have, but playing fewer minutes. And and Lillard was, you know, exciting, high volume scorer, huge minutes player, but he didn't help his team as much as Anthony Davis did this year, I don't think.
So, question for you.
Yeah.
You're GM of Portland, and New Orleans calls him and says, we want to trade Anthony Davis for Damian Lillard.
Oh.
How quick do you say yes?
I would say no for two reasons.
Really?
Yeah. Number one,
okay,
I have a passionate fan base that is already in love with my guy. Like, this is a money machine for me, right, having Damian Lillard here. And number two, I have the most durable rookie, arguably, in NBA history versus a guy that I know was prone to concussions and other injuries, right? And, you know, so I it's not the case of just basketball merit, but for the money and the injury risk, I'm keeping Lillard.
That was pretty surprising to me, but, I mean, they're valid arguments. I don't know. Sound that fine? I don't know if I would agree, but... In this day and age, especially, I guess with Portland specifically, I would have to agree with Henry because we know big men just go to die there.
come on. Yeah, that's, you can't get an injury prone big man. Come on.
Yeah, you can't have another one. So Henry, what I love about Hoop Idea and your philosophy personally is I'm probably the farthest from a traditionalist that you could find. You like to take the greatest game on earth and make it a little better. I mean, we're talking about rookie of the year. I have a problem with probably 90% of the awards in the NBA. Either they're not clear, I don't know what they're measuring, or I don't know why we're measuring certain things. Rookie of the year, for instance, I don't understand, you know, some of the guys are 19, others are 22, 23. Brian Roberts, who was in the top five on Thorpe's finally, he's 27 years old, and yet he's considered a rookie. I don't get it. I have no clue what most improved player is supposed to be. So let me make you the dictator of NBA awards. You could completely throw everything out. You could keep everything. You could create your own. What would your NBA awards season look like at the end of the year? What would you keep? What would you maybe invent? What would you have no use for?
Well, I think the first question, this is a fun question, by the way, and we could talk for hours right now, but but the first thing I think is, what's the point of them? And there's an answer to that that I think is true and real and maybe not as satisfying as we want, but I think the point of them is to make the NBA fun and easy to discuss for people who don't follow that closely, right? So, like, there are a lot of people, so, you know, us hardcore fans, we're going to talk about the NBA no matter what, but it's, you know, you want to walk into a sports bar 80 games into the season and have some context to say, wow, like, you know, Brian Roberts is awesome. And if, you know, the context for that is if he's fifth in rookie of the year, somebody's rookie of the year column, right? Like, that's how you get that knowledge to casual sports fans. And so, you know, I think it just needs to work like that, you know. The thing that is wrong about it, I guess, is I don't like that the voting takes place in the last week of the regular season, because then there are no awards for the most important time of the year, right? We have no awards for the playoffs. Like, it's crazy. Other than finals MVP. You know, then there's still this very open question of, like, what is valuable? And, you know, we just don't know. But we know that the particular way we have valued players, like, really skews dramatically to just whoever has the highest points per game. Right, that's like, that's going to be your award winner in every category, in almost every case, right? Like,
yeah.
So that's dumb. we need some way to get through that. I don't know what that is exactly, but then I would steer your thinking a little bit to all this stuff we're doing with this crowdsourcing. We're just kind of noodling with it, but this ESPN summer forecast has been, basically over the last 5 years beating Vegas with how many teams are going to win this year. And there's, I have actually here in the office all kinds of books on crowdsourcing. And if you look like, wow, I've been talking for a long time, but if you take a jar of jelly beans and show it to, 200 college students in a class and say how many jelly beans are in there, they're basically all idiots, right? No one knows. But they're fascinatingly idiots in equal parts above the proper number and below the proper number. And so if you just take, like, the average of their guesses, you actually get, there might be, like, typical case will be, like, one lucky outlier guy who guessed better than the group, but the average will be the best guess, like, over time. And I think that might be a pretty good way. We have a whole bunch of people watching a whole bunch of games, and rather than saying, look at just PER or points per game or minutes or whatever, metric, I think maybe it's, like, get a whole bunch of smart people who've really watched a lot of games and aren't obsessed with points per game and say, what mattered most here?
Some nerd MVP?
Something like that. Crowdsourced nerd MVP.
Crowdsourced nerd MVP. Yeah. Yeah, I love that crowdsourcing stuff. The Wisdom of Crowds book was excellent.
Yeah,
anyone who's listening to this, if you haven't read Wisdom of Crowds, it sounds lame kind of name, but it's an awesome book. I loved it.
It is so fascinating stuff. I should have used the guessing the weight of the pig example, though. It's more fun than the jelly beans.
Right, or the submarine that was sunk to the bottom of the ocean.
That one's just weird. My brain can't even really get like that.
Yeah. So now I guess I should probably tell that story, right? Right. So
you tell it. To me, it hurt my head. I kept like, what?
So essentially, a submarine goes down during World War II, and they need to find it. They need to know where it is. So they get a bunch of experts in a room. They keep them so they can't talk to each other, because when that happens, people start group thinking. So they get them, and they have them all take their best guess. This is the information we have. Where did it end up? And then they combined all the answers, and they were 100 feet off.
Isn't that amazing?
It's just crazy. Nice. And the information they had was very limited. It was like 4 hours before the submarine went down. This is the last time they checked out. And this is where we think they were headed. And that wasn't even necessarily where they were going.
So there's like information about like weather and currents and stuff, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Crazy stuff. So yes, so that should choose the MVP. We'll just get a bunch of experts and not let them talk to each other.
I hope those guys who found the submarine are still alive, because they've got some work to do for us.
But here's the problem with it. If we do the crowdsourcing thing, though, the idea there is you're not supposed to let them talk to each other because they're all going to like settle on the same thing. But, it's really hard to keep a bunch of sports people from talking to each other. I mean, I've sat there and read sports articles all day.
I know. So it's really tough. It's really tough.
I'm completely, every time you say something, I'm completely swayed, except for this whole
Well, there's a problem. This is a problem. I know for a fact, like, John Hollinger brainwashed me probably 150 times in a row, where, like, I honestly, there's, like, some issue, like, who's going to win? Well, right now we have to worry about, Warriors Spurs, right? And I sit here thinking, having not thought about it much at all, my short of sleep, watching lots of other games, whatever. I'm like, I would think like 80% Spurs are going to win that, but I haven't really thought about it very much, right? If back in the day when he worked here, John Hollinger would write a really hard-hitting column this morning saying, here's why the Warriors are going to win. Wow, that's hard for me to forget. I'm not like 100% going to go with him, but he's a convincing guy with a hell of a track record, and he makes convincing arguments, and I get this dynamic, and we did a couple of our crowdsourcing things. I felt really bad about, I can't even remember now, but I had killed some player right before we did our first NBA rank. I can't remember who it was, but somebody, basically this is somebody, let's just make it up, but like I'm saying he's like the 200th best player, let's say, and everyone else thinks he's the 50th best player, something like that, right? And right. And I know that a lot of Troop Network bloggers probably read this thing, and we do the survey like the next day, and he comes out like the 400th ranked guy.
I'm like, I feel sort of guilty about that.
No, you should feel satisfied, powerful.
But I didn't even think he was the 400th guy. Like, it's just, like, it's just too much.
And then something else you work on with the hoop idea, and I fully believe you want games to be more entertaining. He wrote a series of articles, especially last year. So I'm sitting down, I'm watching this hugely entertaining OKC Houston game, and then for about 15 minutes in real time, it shifts to a Omer Asik free throw shooting exhibition.
Yeah.
What would you, I mean, do you like this strategy? If we're just talking about making the game more fun, what would your solution be with this? I guess we call it hack and a sheik now. What's your solution?
I was saying that, I said this yesterday, hack and a sheik. It sounds like a curse, right? Like, or bless you, you know? I think it's important to make clear that my beef is not with any team trying to do whatever it thinks will make it win. Actually, even on the dirty fouls, like I don't, I'm not really in the business of like pointing out villains. Like that's not, but I do think there's a league problem. I'm talking to Davis Stern here, and basically, intentional fouls of many different varieties are never entertaining, never what people buy their tickets for, never the most fun thing to watch, and very often, you know, the best time to intentional foul for advantage is basically when the defense is at a disadvantage, which means we were about to get something great. You know, like, so, you know, if I beat my man and I'm headed for the rim with space, now you're going to wrap me up or hit me in the head or, you know, intentionally foul me. But when I'm well covered, you're not going to bother. So it's like they're specifically taking the highlight moments, you know, and that, you know, so we have, Kevin Durant is one of the finest, you know, like most delightful scorers in NBA history. And that was a game where he might have led his team to whatever it was, a 15-point deficit in the second half to like and just a stunning, memorable thing with, you know, and that would have taken probably steals and fast breaks and threes and all kinds of craziness, right? Like he's a guy who makes 4-point plays and stuff. We could have had all that fun stuff. But we didn't get any of that. You know, they took it from us, and I don't mind that Scott Brooks tried it. I mind that the NBA rules, I mean, they don't really directly reward it very much, but they don't punish it enough that nobody wants to do it.
All right. So I'm not a fan of it. I wish they would come up with, like, the clear path fouls kind of thing, where if you're intentionally fouling someone, two shots in the ball, do something along that lines, but... Yeah. This is the one thing I have, and this is just me doing all the advanced stats. In the NBA, if you can do better than 1 point per possession, you're doing pretty well. And if you foul a guy who shoots like around 50%, you're not doing any better. Do you know what I mean when I'm saying
right,
that? It's like you're not really helping yourself. You're giving them essentially. He shoots 50%, so he'll get 1 point. That was 1 point per possession. And you've completely negated any chance you're going to get at getting a steal. You've negated any chance that your team is going to be able to be attacking a non-set defense, because as soon as that guy shooting his free throws, his entire team is back on defense. You're not going to get any advantage there. It just seems to me that unless the guy's like DeAndre Jordan and shooting 38% on the season or whatever he's at right now, there's almost nobody in the league who's worth fouling in a hack attack.
Yeah, certainly not like all game, right? I mean, I think the math changes a little bit in a way that it's hard to fathom, but, you know, if you can calculate a certain point in the game that you're, you know, you have 20 possessions left likely, and you need to outscore your guys, you know, like, you know, 15 times. Like, it's just unlikely you're going to do it. So you, by basically shortening the other team's possessions, you might give yourself 30 possessions left in the game, which, you know, ups the variability of the rest of the game such that it might, you know, teams probably have won games doing it. I can't think of an example, but I wouldn't be surprised if it has happened, because it does just add more possessions, which makes things crazier. But all those other things you described, and also, Hollinger was pointing out, you know, the guy shooting his second free throw, and by and large, teams get an offensive rebound something like 10% of the time. But on a lot of those, they're not trying to get a rebound. But on these ones, we know we have a close game. You know, they're probably going to put good rebounders in. We know we have dead ball, and we know they're going to fight for it. And so, on these particular Hakanashik or Hakashak or kind of free throws, that second one might be rebounded much more than the 10%. And you could end up, you could be giving the team, you know, a free throw and possession. You know, something like 15-20% of the time, which is horrible.
Yeah. I think the most telling thing you said there is you can't think of a team that won doing hack attack tactics.
That's only because I have a horrible memory.
I can't remember one, though. Can you, Michael?
No, I mean, I think it was Daryl Morey who said that it's probably a better strategy when you're ahead. And I agree with that. I could see it working that way if you're ahead and holding on to a lead. But, yeah, I can't think of a team coming back with it. So
we know the Spurs have done this, right? I mean, the Spurs have done this, which means a lot of those must have ended in wins, right? I don't know if they were behind when they did it or not. But
yeah, I think everything the Spurs do ends in wins, though, so that's
right. That's my assumption.
So there was another interesting piece. You kind of put forward a chart that, you know, I think most of us just know is kind of common sense, but you illustrated it really well and in showing how few 6'10 or bigger people there are in the world and you know, how rare it is that they're good at basketball. So GMs tend to go into the draft and just pick these big guys because they're such a rare commodity. We're 6 foot point guards are, you know, higher volume and theoretically easier to get. One of your partners on Troop TV, David Thorpe, goes a step further and he says, based on this and some other things, he would just make Trey Burke the number one pick in the draft this year. What were your thoughts overall on his argument and did he sway you or do you have a different opinion on this?
I just want to make clear, you know, he's a good friend of mine. And he was not, like, just saying an outrageous thing to drive traffic. Like, he really believes this. Like, we've talked about this at length. And I find it exciting. So, you know, I guess one of the questions going into any draft is who has that sort of crazy X-factor drive or whatever it is that is going to make a very good college player into, like, 5 years into his career, just a legendary NBA player. So I'm thinking about, you know, Chris Paul was not a clear number one pick and actually wasn't a number one pick at all. But looking back, like he maybe should have been, right? He's an MVP candidate. Like, so what are the chances you're going to find somebody with just that perfect heart, mind, whatever it is, that's going to make him keep improving and keep understanding the game? And I just think if you're talking about a 6 foot tall player, you know that the intangibles are, you know, one in hundreds of millions, right? Because there are all these people around the world who are that size playing basketball, and this guy somehow rose to the top of that crowd. So the chances of the intangibles being special are very high. This isn't science here. I'm just sort of – that was the point of that hilarious, like, hand-drawn chart that actually I got off the internet, but that Thorpe thought my daughter made. But yeah, so I think, and then Thorpe kind of did a kind of rough and ready study where he just looked at the highest drafted short player in all of the last decade or so, and except for Johnny Flynn, they've basically all been very special players who probably should have been drafted higher. So I think there's just a bias, like, you know, you need a quality big man to win a title or compete. Actually, you need several, but and the draft is it never come free anywhere, right? You have to do all kinds of crazy things to get them. I think the draft people get a little bit like, well, I'm just going to get my big man now because this is a chance to get him. But I think that ends up – I think he's right, you know, that you end up missing some great small players. And I don't know, you know, Trey Burke, to really weigh in there, I'd have to have watched way more college basketball than I did. I don't know how these people do it. Like, I'm watching NBA every night for hours. When are you supposed to watch college basketball?
Yeah, so I think – as far as draft goes, I think you have another reason to be very thankful that Damian Lillard turned out to be a good player, because you know Portland was going to be picking Nerlens Noel otherwise with his torn ACL.
Well, that's a complicated bit of thinking. But yeah, you're probably right. I'll go with that.
That would have been the inevitable conclusion if you guys were near the bottom of the league this year.
Yeah, I guess you're right.
So, I mean, you talked about Chris Paul. Goes back to you talked a little bit earlier about John Hollinger. There's a big game tonight. Now, let's say the Grizzlies go ahead and win tonight. Now, in New Orleans, I mean, honestly, we're a little sensitive, but I'm trying to be as objective as possible here.
Have you heard of this Chris Paul guy before?
Yeah, I've heard of him. He's not bad, but he wanted out of here because he wanted to win big. I'll admit at the time there was no ownership here. The roster was poor, putting it nicely. I could completely see him wanting out 2 years ago, applaud the way he handled it with as much class as possible, especially when you compare it to somebody like Dwight Howard. But he wants to win, and he wants to win championships. He's been in L.A. now for 2 years. The first year they got to the second round, got swept. This year they had a nice long winning streak, won the most games in franchise history. But if they lose tonight, they're out in the first round. They don't have any cap space or flexibility to really improve the roster. They're tied in with huge numbers to their two big men. And I just don't see any possible way that Chris Paul could convince himself that this team that's going backwards can suddenly become an NBA finals threat. Give me the argument for just basketball-wise, not marketability-wise. Is there a basketball argument to be made for Chris Paul looking at his options this summer and actually choosing and going back to the Clippers?
Yeah. I don't know what's going to happen with the Clippers roster, right? There are lots of things that could change. But, you know, Blake Griffin missed a good chunk of that last game and, you know, was playing hurt when he was out there. And, you know, I think we assume that your Eric Bledsoes and DeAndre Jordans and such are improving still. DeAndre Jordan maybe not improving this week.
Yeah, I'm not sure about Jordan.
But those big guys, I mean, like, they take a long time to really reach their peak. I mean, he doesn't really have a role in this series, which is too bad for him, you know? But anyway, I don't know. They could be better, but I think you've stumbled into an issue where I think there's like a much more profound thing going on, which is, and would you like to hear about it?
I would.
Yeah. So I think, if you look, so, you know, Jay-Z recently started a sports agency, right? He's selling his share of the Nets to be an agent. If you want to have LeBron in your TV commercial, then their policy, I don't know if it's 100% across the world, by and large, is he doesn't want money. He wants equity, right? So he wants to be – he wants to own part of Sprite or Nike or whatever it is. Chris Paul is part of a generation of young superstars that are into equity, and it's brilliant. And what they want is – you know, the system is set up for them to be kind of – you know, trusted laborers who go about their business and take their paycheck and go home. But that's not reflective of what's really happening in the marketplace. The fact of the matter is, you know, Chris Paul is a bigger business entity than arguably the team he plays for. Mm-hmm. You know, Chris Paul is going to fill a stadium in China like that. Certainly the Clippers president wouldn't, whatever, but, would someone wearing a Clippers logo do that? I don't know. You know, so I think it's, these superstars have this thing where I think they have, starting with LeBron's decision and with Melo going to New York, I think they're shopping for partners. And, like, what they want is an owner who's going to be a partner. Now, you're going to say he chose Donald Sterling? Like, I recognize, crazy choice, but the fact is Donald Sterling is paid. And he's let Chris Paul make a lot of decisions, and I think rightfully so. So I think that's, you know, this is this sort of thing where there's a big race component here, right? It used to be old white guys making all the decisions, and now – you know, the super value driving, super underpaid, you know, young black men who really are the geniuses of the game are saying, let me have some control. Let me come to the big table with you and make big decisions. And I think that was a big part of what took Chris Paul to LA. And I think he got that. And I think that he likes that and he's going to enjoy that forever.
Okay. So, yeah. So off the court, which I have no problem with if he comes out and says that, but you know he's going to sell that.
But you can't say that. You can't say that, right? America doesn't want to hear that. That's a losing message. You can't say I want to be the young employee who tells everybody what to do. Like everyone's like, well, I hate you then. You know, like you can't. Right. Like that's not gonna work.
He's just gonna go out and say I'm a global icon.
Yeah.
Because that was so well received from LeBron back when he said it.
I think you just have to say like, you know, we've built a really great team here. We have a plan. We have a strategy in place. Like I'm looking forward to seeing how the next few years unfold. You know, that kind of stuff.
So you're probably giving it 80%, 90% odds, or even better than that Chris Paul stays.
I mean, look, you're asking. I don't know. I think I know a lot about why he left. You know, like
right.
What he does now. You know, last time I talked to Plugged In people, it seemed pretty likely he was going to stay. But it's Chris Paul's mood. You know, it could change any time.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, we know this.
Yes.
We'll change after they lose tonight.
Right. Right.
And I mean, so what do you think? I mean, you're talking about players valuing this equity. I mean, we just had a big knockout dragout CBA negotiations. Supposedly, a big part of it was parity in the NBA. Does that make it even harder now for small markets to really compete long term?
No, I really don't think so. Like, you know, there are so many. I mean, look, if you look at the a few weeks ago, everybody's presumed finalists were Oklahoma City and Miami. That's like 17 and 30, I think, in terms of where they rank in NBA market size. The other contender was San Antonio, which is whatever number that is in the 20s, right? There's not a crisis here. I think the thing that's being exposed here is that they were never serious about parity. And we know that because no league in the history of the world has increased parity with weird salary restrictions. According to David Forrest, this English economist who studied this stuff for years, I interviewed during the lockout. But what they do is you constrain salaries and it keeps owners from getting into bidding wars. And so, you know, the fix for the parity thing, if we need one, is exactly – so it's something that won't cost owners in aggregate a penny, but they won't do it. And this exposes what their real game is, right? So if you just removed max salaries, if Chris Paul could make $80 million a year, then this whole problem goes away, right? Like he doesn't need to find, you know, like his excess in power, which lets him like run a team, comes from the fact that he's paid a quarter of what he's worth. So he's basically saying, all right, well, I'll take the money that is a quarter of what I'm worth. What else are you going to give me? But if he's actually paid what he's worth, he doesn't have to have that negotiation, right? And then he wouldn't play with Blake Griffin. You know, same with LeBron made $100 million a year, he wouldn't play with Dwayne Wade and Chris Bosh. So there's a fix here. If we keep, you know, the sort of fairly hard cap they have and let any individual player make as much as they want, don't forget all the players share 50% of BRI. So it won't cost owners in total a single penny more. That money, the extra money Chris Paul makes will come from other players. But they don't want to do it because they don't. Having a bidding war for those superstars makes owners look bad. Either they get Chris Paul for $100 million or whatever, which is crazy risky for them. They could look really bad. Or they don't get him and look really bad for that. And they don't want to look bad either way. So they just say, okay, we'll take Chris Paul at $15 million. And that means Pat Riley can put three stars together. And, you know, they've made their own bed here.
Mm. Yep. So I know you've got to go, but I have one last question for you.
Yeah,
since you're a Western Conference team, other than Oklahoma City, which is a given, and if you wouldn't answer that, you'd be kind of foolish. What team in the West for the next? You know, we're hoping our teams will start contending in 2 or 3 years. What team in the West scares you the most, other than Oklahoma City? Who should we watch with a jaundiced eye?
Well, as a Blazer fan, I'm terrified of the Blazers. They scare me every year. No, I'm just kidding.
That's such a cop-out.
No, hold on. You know what I'm going to do? I'm going on my computer right now to look at the list of teams because I just don't want to miss anybody who I should be scared of.
Phoenix Suns? I think they're number one on my list.
What is wrong with them?
It's so bad. It's so bad. I mean, you kind of want to point to the owner because that's where everything starts going south. But
wow. I wrote this a little bit. Everyone makes so much fun of David Kahn, but it's like there are you know, half the league has a worse roster than the Timberwolves. Like if David Kahn's the biggest idiot, like what are these other guys? But and I was thinking of the Suns as I said that. All right, so you know Denver is going to be a handful for a long time. I'm a huge Memphis, like you know, like I was talking about Hollinger brainwashed me. Like so does his team now. Like Memphis.
Does he return your calls anymore? Since he left,
no, he's the nicest guy in the world. Yeah, he'll yeah, whatever.
But when you ask him questions, he doesn't answer them anymore. He's like,
no, I respectfully try not to bother him because I know he's busy. But if I email him or text him, he gets right back to me with, you know, I mean he's politic. He's a good employee. He's not like he's telling me all their secrets. But
right,
you know, actually I've been meaning. I really want to know when Marc Gasol won Defensive Player of the Year. People were all up in arms and like I was like I should ask Hollinger for his. His thinking on is Marc Gasol Defensive Player of the Year. I'd be interested to see what he says.
That would be interesting.
All right, so looking around here, what's going to happen with the Lakers? I have no idea. Golden State? Got to respect Golden State, especially today. Yeah, so I would say these are your teams to worry about for the next few years, right? Oklahoma City, Denver, Golden State, Clippers. Memphis, I guess. I mean, if Houston gets another star, look out.
So anybody in the playoffs?
I'm looking. I'm trying to be creative.
I'm
not scared. Oh, look, not Sacramento, not Phoenix, right? maybe Minnesota, but you know, San Antonio will fade at some point, right?
All right, I'm gonna make you pick one.
Oh, just one. So you
and it can't be Oklahoma City because that's obvious.
Please be very clear. Your question is, which non-Oklahoma City team will be best in like 2 years? Is that what you're saying, basically?
Yes, the team that will scare the crap out of you every time you play them.
I'll take Memphis.
Okay. I like that pick. It's very, very unpopular though. Nobody ever talks about Memphis
because they play defense. They don't like defense.
Right. I love Memphis.
I love Memphis. Marc Gasol is still pretty young.
Yeah, he is.
And you know, how great is Mike Conley?
Yeah, I was actually earlier in the season when I was just taking a look at them, and I don't know if you ever listened to our podcast, but Rudy Gay is like my whipping boy.
Uh-oh.
He's like my least favorite NBA player.
Yeah.
I kept looking at that team when Rudy Gay was on it, and he's taken like 19 shots, and there are three people on that team who average more than 1.3 points per shot, and he's like averaging not even 1.1, and he's taking way more shots than everybody else. I'm like, this is just dumb, because he just distributes half the shots to his other guys, and this becomes a monster team.
And then sure enough, they trade him away, get better at scoring.
Yes.
Even though, and nevertheless, like the day after the trade, everybody's assessment is, how the heck are they going to score anymore? And it's like,
right.
Well, because they got rid of Rudy Gay, that's how they're going to score more.
But Toronto, they're a team to be feared.
I know. I feel bad.
As soon as Rudy Gay gets injured, the team goes on a tear. I'm like, come on, people.
Honestly, one of my thoughts there is poor Canada.
Yeah.
Like they support the hell out of that team. They, you know, I would love for Canada to have a really good team, but like they just don't know what they're doing. Like,
I don't know. Bargnani and Gay, that's a core to work with.
Yeah. It's not good.
All right, Henry, thanks for coming on.
Lots of fun. Thank you for having me. Ain't nothing but a party.